Are you ready for tomorrow? I don't literally mean tomorrow. I mean, is your career on track for whatever the future might bring? I mean, are you planning ahead, prepared for the years to come? Or are you, like most of us, mainly stuck in today, reacting to whatever fires need to be put out in the moment? If that's the case, have a listen to these five big ideas from Build for Tomorrow, an action plan for embracing change, adapting fast, and future-proofing your career by Jason Pfeiffer. Jason is the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine and hosts the podcasts Build for Tomorrow and Problem Solvers. Here he is to share five big ideas from his book.
Hi, my name is Jason Pfeiffer, and I'm the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, as well as the author of the new book, Build for Tomorrow. Build for Tomorrow is a book that helps you navigate and thrive during times of change. And it's written for anybody who's going through some kind of big transition right now. Maybe your work has changed, maybe something in your life has changed. I have a really unique viewpoint on this, and that's because, well, with my day job as editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine, I have access to the most creative, successful, adaptable people, these people who thrive in times of change, and I wanted to understand how they're doing it. I also study the history of innovation for a podcast that I do, and so I have watched as innovations, world-changing innovations, were introduced to the world and then resisted or caused confusion and then figured out what it was that ultimately got people to accept them. And I wanted to take all the lessons that I'd learned from the smartest entrepreneurs of today and the history of innovation and create a framework so that anybody could move through change and find something great. Because as I study all this, what I found is that everyone, doesn't matter how successful or not you are, everyone goes through change in the same four phases. They are, number one, panic, then adaptation, then new normal, and then finally, wouldn't go back. That moment where you say, I have something so new and valuable that I wouldn't want to go back to a time before I had it. Everybody has that waiting for them, but some people just simply are able to move through it faster. It's not something they were born knowing how to do. It's a skill that they learned. And so I want to teach that skill to others. And again, that's what Build for Tomorrow, the book, is. Here now, I'm going to offer you five takeaways, five big ideas from the book. The first one is to find the thing that does not change even in times of change. Now, people often ask me, what's the first thing that they should do when they're navigating change? And the answer is that you need to identify the thing about you that is not going to change. It's tough to do because we naturally identify with the output of our work, right? I mean, think about it. If somebody comes up to you at a party and asks what you do, what you're going to tell them is either the particular job title you have, or the role that you have, or the way in which you do your work, or the thing that you create. And that's natural. We should be proud of that. And it's a good way to understand ourselves. But the problem is that when we identify too closely with that, well, what we do is we tie ourselves to something that's very changeable. We tie our very identity to something that's changeable. And that means that when change finally does come along, we feel just totally disoriented. And so I realized for myself, and I see others do this too, that what I needed to do, what we all need to do, is to identify something, some kind of mission statement, something that's so core to us that it does not change despite anything that happens around us. Because that way we will feel oriented in times of disorientation. I came to realize that the best way to do this, and I hear this from entrepreneurs all the time, is to really come up with a single sentence. And in the book, I offer a framework to get there. But here, just to keep it short, I'll tell you that I find that it's really helpful to just get a few words down, have it start with I, and make sure that every one of those words cannot be easily disrupted. So for me, for example, I started my career in newspapers, and I once identified as a newspaper reporter, and you know, then I felt pretty lost when I decided newspapers weren't for me, because this wasn't just giving up a job, it was giving up an identity. I eventually came to realize that a better way to define myself is this: I tell stories in my own voice. I tell stories in my own voice. Stories, not newspaper stories, not magazine stories, not books, in my own voice. Those are the terms in which I'm going to do that work. I think that when we all find this thing deep inside of us, this core, this why, this thing that drove us to develop the skills that enable us to do the tasks that we normally identify with, we will know what part of us does not change. We will know our mission statement. We will know how to continue to provide value and what we are good for, even when the things around us start to feel unfamiliar. Here's number two. In order to be good at something, you have to be willing to be bad. That's something Ryan Reynolds told me. Ryan Reynolds, the actor, who also went on to start an extremely successful advertising agency called Maximum Effort, and he also owns Aviation Gin and Mint Mobile. And Ryan told me when we spoke a while ago that he realized that the thing that distinguishes people is not whether they're good at something at the beginning, because nobody will be good at something at the beginning. That's just not possible. Instead, it is really whether or not you are able to tolerate being bad at the beginning, because that is the natural state. When we try something new, we cannot set the expectation that we will have some kind of mastery or that we will be able to produce the kind of good things that we see around us. You know, I mean, if you're just starting out being a painter, you know what good paintings look like and you know that you cannot produce them yourself. The question isn't whether or not you can do well. The question is simply, can you tolerate that discomfort? As a result, I've started saying this thing to myself whenever I do something new, whenever I'm put into an uncomfortable position, and maybe it'll be helpful for you too. I like to say, I can't wait to do this the second time. Because when you frame doing something for the first time as simply a means to get to the second time, the stakes start to feel much different. And suddenly, you feel like this is something that you can tackle. Okay, here's the third thing to think about. I call it work your next job. So in front of you right now are two sets of opportunities, opportunity set A and opportunity set B. Opportunity set A is everything that's asked of you. So everything at your job, you show up, your boss needs things from you, that's opportunity set A. You got to do a good job at that. Opportunity set B is everything that is available to you that nobody is asking you to do. Now, that could also be at your job where you take on new roles or responsibilities or join a different team, but it could also be something outside of work where you take a class, learn a new skill. You like reading books, maybe you try to write one yourself. The point here is that I have found that opportunity set B, doing the things that are available to you that nobody's asking you to do, that is always more important. Infinitely more important. And the reason for that is because if you only focus on opportunity set A, which you should not abandon it, you need to do good work, well, then you will only be qualified to do the thing you're already doing. But if you can focus on opportunity set B, if you can build that into the way in which you operate, if right now you can start identifying things that you can learn, even if you don't know what the point of it is, I mean, you know, you're going to start writing a book, are you going to sell that book? Who knows? I'm telling you, it doesn't matter, because simply having started doing these things is going to open up new opportunities. It's going to teach you something. It's going to give you some new insight. And it could be months or years later when there will be a new opportunity presenting itself, or you will be seeking some kind of new change. And it turns out that this thing that you had worked on that you didn't know what it was for, well, that is the thing that is ultimately going to drive you forward. It's going to be the thing that opens new doors for you. Always, always, always focus on opportunity set B. Next, here's a question that is really important to ask yourself whenever you are navigating something new, you're trying something new, you're experiencing something new. Well, before I tell you the question, actually, I'm going to tell you the question you shouldn't ask, but it's the one that we all ask too often. That question is this perfect? Right? We will often ask that. We'll start something new and we'll say, it's not quite right. There's a problem here. And then you'll feel like the whole thing is wrong. Personally, I will tell you right now, as I record this, my 7-year-old son started a new school. He's like 2 weeks into it. And, you know, it's going okay. But my wife is extremely concerned. And the reason is because we pick him up and he doesn't have a large group of friends. And he comes home and he complains that this or that happened. And what she is looking for, I know we've talked about this, is that she's looking for signs of perfection. She wants to see that match. She wants to see that he's instantly thriving. And that's not the way in which things happen. So what's the better question to ask? The better question to ask is our new problem better than our old problem? The reason I love that question is because it allows for problems, because nothing is perfect. I mean, you start a new job, it's not going to be perfect. You engage with some new piece of technology, it's not going to be perfect. That's not the point. The point is not perfection, because we're never going to reach perfection. And if we filter for perfection, we are going to throw every single thing out. Instead, the question is our new problem better than our old problem? The answer is yes. I mean, for my kid in school, yeah, absolutely, because we put him into this great new school. It solves a whole bunch of other problems for us. And now there are new problems, which is that there's an adjustment period. And that's fine. That's a better new problem than some of the old problems we were facing before. So I'm really excited for that. And when you reframe everything you see in terms of, is our new problem better than our old problem, then you start to be able to digest problems and instead focus on progress. And then number five, what is it for? That is a question I think you should be asking of every single thing that you do. What is it for? And the reason is because what is it for forces you to make sure that the things that you're doing have some kind of valuable outcome to you. And it's okay if that outcome looks different or strange, or even if that outcome is coming later, but you're working towards it. But, you know, we do so many things, and we want to know which things we should devote our time and our energy to. And we also want to understand how best to maximize the opportunities in front of us. And that question, what is it for? Well, it really helps clarify. I'll give you an example. So I run a print magazine. In a year, in a decade, in an era in which print magazines are often considered to be dying arts. Lots of them have closed. They don't sell as well as they used to. And I'm not just talking about Entrepreneur. I'm talking about every print magazine. So people often ask me, you know, you're a guy who embraces and preaches the power of change. Why are you putting out a print magazine? And the answer, well, I mean, frankly, the answer in part is that Entrepreneur Magazine as a print magazine still makes money. There's no reason to kill it off. But the bigger answer comes when you start to ask this fascinating question, what is it for? Because if you were to ask the question, what is it for, of content more generally, well, a couple decades ago, you might have said content is for monetization. You make money off of content because, well, there are two easy ways, if you're talking a couple decades ago, to make money off of a magazine. You can sell ads into it, and you can sell subscriptions to it. Two great ways to make money off of content. But now it's harder to do that. And again, that's not just Entrepreneur, that's everywhere. It's tough. It's a tough market. It's harder to sell ads. Facebook and Google have gobbled up like a bulk of just the world's advertising budget. And then also, people don't subscribe. They don't pay to subscribe to things as much as they used to. So the question then now is, well, what is it for? Is it for anything? And as I thought a lot about this, I realized that, well, yes, it is for something. It's just different than it was before. Content now is for relationships. That's what it's for. Because people will trust you because of content. They will like you because of content. You build a relationship with people when you put something out into the world. And then if you're a business, you can monetize that relationship with products and services that people trust you to buy because they like the content. So content is for something. And once we know that, we can start to shift the way in which we actually produce it and the way in which we engage with the people who consume it. We can start to think differently about the whole business model, and we can start to shape things in a way that are really going to be built on what people need and what the reality is now. What is it for? You see how by asking that simple question, I reframe an entire business and I reframe the way in which I work? Imagine what will happen if you start asking that of everything you do, whether it's something at your job or just something you're trying to do or something you're building. And look, it doesn't have to have some payoff, like I said earlier. You know, I host a podcast called Build for Tomorrow, same as the book. And this podcast, I'll be honest with you, it makes money, but it doesn't make that much money. I spend more time on it than I earn back. And so what is it for? I ask this question all the time. And the answer that I have right now is that it's for opportunity. The podcast is an opportunity magnet. I put it out there. People find it. They develop great relationships with me. They're interested. It's sort of a version of content is for relationships. But and then they bring me opportunities. I've done a lot of things as a result of people who find the podcast. This book, in fact, that I hope you read, Build for Tomorrow, came out of the podcast. So this is where I say, as long as you can ask, what is it for? And you have an answer, well, you can keep going and changing and building. Those are five big ideas from my book, Build for Tomorrow. I hope you pick it up, and I hope that you are building something for yourself today that will last and thrive tomorrow.
Thank you, Jason. That was Jason Pfeiffer with five big ideas from Build for Tomorrow, an action plan for embracing change, adapting fast, and future-proofing your career. You might also want to check out our book bite for Future Proof by New York Times technology correspondent Kevin Roos. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.